a gun in the face.
Then all of a sudden, they all kind of lined up. They pointed their guns at me. And this is the point where I thought, I'm going to die today.
Started 2 years of horror for an American in Venezuela.
They said, you need to give us your phone and get ready because you're coming with us.
I'm Becky Bruce, and I spent a year researching and piecing together Josh and Tammy Holt's story about their ordeal in a notorious prison.
That's when everything started to turn bad. We had another pound on the door. Boom, boom, boom. And there was the police once again.
You can binge all of the episodes of Hope and Darkness on KSLPodcasts.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Utah's best athletes count on flexibility, speed, strength.
And the Jazz pick up their 22nd assist.
So they count on University of Utah Health.
Brielle Soleil puts this game away.
And so can you. Leading doctors, a world-class environment, award-winning innovation, care to be great.
14 unanswered by the Utes.
University of Utah Health, caring for Utah's best and yours. Schedule your appointment now at uofuhealth.org/care to be great.
The noon hour is here.
Check it out.
And you're locked on to Utah's highest rated, most listened to sports radio station.
It's my station.
It's my station.
This is Hans Olsen and Scotty G on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
So, Lloyd, you know what I love the most about this new job, being up in a booth and calling these BYU games? I love the fact that I get those game day jitters just a little bit. It's not anything like
You get the bubble guts a little bit?
Not the bubble guts, just the butterflies. Why bubble guts, Lloyd? I'm not over here eating bad chili.
No, it's like the nerves that get in your guts a little bit. Anything about eating anything bad.
I'm just talking about the butterflies. And you remember that spike of anxiety? I know you got to go back a ways in your baseball playing days, but that spike of anxiety that would come on a game day and your palms get a little bit sweaty and you'd start thinking about the matchups. It's about 1/8 of that game day feeling when you're going to be stepping out on the diamond or stepping out on the field. Like, it's about 1/8.
You hear that first pop of the ball in the glove, and you're like, okay, it's go time.
It's go time. But at least it's something. At least it's some type of game day feel that I haven't had since I played way back in the early 2000s. Well, I guess it was mid-2000s. I played into 2007. But it was really tough to leave that game day feel, kind of that emotion and the anxieties and the butterflies. But when you prepare for these games and you know specific angles and you plot out each player, and I've gone through every single player for Cincinnati, went through two games this morning. I went through the Pitt game and the Oklahoma game, looking at each one of these rushers and how they rush and where they rush from, and looking at the star linebackers and the safeties and the corners, and then flipping over to the offensive side and getting to really know the offensive side of Cincinnati with Emory Jones and Corey Kiner, their running back, and their backup running backs, and Miles Montgomery and Ryan Montgomery. And you start to learn it, and then you start to see what this game shapes up to be. And it gives you a little bit of anxiety because you get to sit up there on a mic, you get to call it, you get to make predictions and thoughts on angles of a game, and then you get to watch it play out. And if it plays out the way you kind of see it playing out, and you hope, obviously, that BYU can get the win because you're standing up there calling these games for BYU, and you see a fumble or two, or you see a big turnover or two, I would say probably the most excitement that I felt so far through this new job of calling these BYU games was probably the Max Tooley interception against Arkansas. It's those impactful moments that draw you in, that pull the excitement out of you, and at least I get to feel a little bit of excitement on a game day. And today's a game day, and it's a big game day, and it's not just a game day for BYU, it's a game day for Utah. So what do we do here for you on the Hanson Scotty Show? We bring in the big guns. We've got Football Fridays coming up with Ron McBride and Alema Harrington. They're going to be in here at 1 o'clock, so we're going to hit that hard. Coming in right out of the gates here in just 2 minutes, Jim Kelly, the color analyst for the Cincinnati Bearcats. He's in town, ready to call this game. He's going to join us here in a couple minutes and give us a nice inside look on Cincinnati. Obviously, we're going to be talking a lot of Utah-Oregon State at 12:30. You're going to hear from one of their booth guys and analysts, and we'll get a good conversation going with what Oregon State looks like and what Utah's chances are tonight as well. It's just, man, it's exciting. Football is just full swing, and it is powerful, and this is as good as sports get. And what I love about right now is you've got BYU in a P5 conference in a P5 matchup. You've got Utah in a P5 conference in a P5 matchup. Both of their futures are undetermined. We're already seeing the way injuries start to change and affect things, but we're starting to get a feel for what these two teams are and what they're all about. But things can change. You know, BYU's got some big shoes to fill tonight. Some really big shoes to fill tonight. Without Ben Bywater, your leading tackler, you put Harrison Taggart on the field. He's got 3 tackles as compared to Ben Bywater's 32. You bring in a freshman to back him up in Ace Kafusi. You bring in another freshman to back him up in Siale Ircerra. You've got now 3 freshmen that are going to be trying to fill the shoes of Ben Bywater, and that is just not easy. I mean, then you go to the safety situation. Can Tanner Wall and Ethan Slate, can they pick up their game? Can Raider DeMooney take that next step? Because I do believe that Raider DeMooney is the future at that safety position for BYU. Can he take that next step? And then can BYU get any semblance of a run game going against Cincinnati? Cincinnati is a 3-man front. And even though Oklahoma only went just barely over 100 yards, I do see some rushing opportunities against this Cincinnati defense. So BYU has a big challenge in front of them. Utah's got a big challenge in front of them. And in my opinion, college football just doesn't get much better than it's going to get tonight. So again, right at 1 o'clock, Ron McBride, Alema Harrington, they'll be kicking off Football Fridays. We'll get really deep right out of the gates into that Utah-Oregon State game with Coach Mack. We're going to get some of his thoughts on Cam Rising and maybe what's going on a little bit deeper there with the Utah quarterback that hasn't seen the field. And we'll get some thoughts, obviously from Alema on this BYU-Cincinnati game. In the meantime, my good friend and voice of Cincinnati, Jim Kelly, hanging out with us. Jim, how are you enjoying the state so far?
Love it out here, Hans. Thank you. Thanks for having me on today.
Well, glad that you'd join me. What do you think of these mountains, man?
Yeah, we don't have any of these in Ohio. We have a few hills, but that's about it. No, it's absolutely breathtaking. And, you know, fortunately, I've spent a handful of times out here and always enjoy coming out to Utah.
Well, we need to get you in a car and get you up Provo Canyon. Have you been up the canyon to go see the falls and go see the fall colors up there yet?
I have not. I've admired the pictures that I've seen today, which, you know, a number of different folks seem to be posting on different sites, but no, I've never been up there myself.
Well, tell you what, when we're wrapping up our broadcast at 2:30 in the morning tomorrow morning, and we're walking.
I don't think we'll see much.
Let's hope we got a bright moon.
It will be about that late. You're correct.
It's going to be a late night for sure. But I think that we are in store for a fantastic game. Jim, take us into this Cincinnati team. I want you to start with the offensive side of the ball. What are your thoughts on Emory Jones and the way he's controlled things so far for the Bearcats?
Yeah, so interesting. And games one and two, Emory was really, really good. You know, was able to move the football, made the right decisions. And that is for Eastern Kentucky, game one, Pittsburgh, which was on the road, which is a tough thing to do. He played extremely well. Honestly, in the Miami of Ohio game, between the 20s, he moved the ball and ran the team very well also. But then that's when the red zone issues started to evolve and some bad decisions, just, you know, a play here and there that was an inch from being a completion or an inch from breaking a tackle that could have, you know, put more points on the board in 550 some yards total offense and to lose the football game. And then last week against Oklahoma, played well, but not great. And again, a very, very good Oklahoma team, quite honestly, that I believe came in to Cincinnati where even all four of their games with a highly touted offense has a really good defense. So, you know, the fact that Emory played okay against Oklahoma, the red zone problems were still there as evidence of just getting 6 points, two field goals. The Bearcats could not get into the end zone. So, I mean, he's very, very capable. If you look at his numbers and you break down, you know, everything that he's been able to do, he kind of finds himself right in the middle of the Big 12 right now, four games in. So he's very capable. At the same time, you know, there's some things he could do a little bit better, but he's played pretty well.
Let's talk about that a little bit, Jim. I was looking at that, just the offense moves, 488 yards a game. They're all over the field. But the only areas that I could find where Cincinnati falls a little bit short is their red zone defense and their red zone offense. You talked about it. 19 attempts in the red zone, 19 attempts in the red zone, and coming out with some empties and only 9 touchdowns out of those 19 trips into the red zone. What is it that's slowing them down a little bit in the red zone?
Yeah, it's clearly the red zone. And thanks for pointing out the defensive side as well, because obviously that plays into BYU's strength. But what it is, it's, you know, a misread here or there. For example, a couple of times in the Miami game, zone read type of plays, which could be, you know, the running back carrying the ball. Corey Kiner had a good game that day. Ryan Montgomery was the back that day, had a good day. But it was situations where had Emory held the ball, he could have walked into the end zone. There were some missed passes. Then there were some other ones where, you know, fourth and one and things like that, that they just didn't get it done that you know, I don't know if you put it all on the offensive line, because certainly the running back or the quarterback has a say in it as well, but they were unable to capitalize on those. And, you know, if they would have, you know, in I'm going off of memory, it was 2 out of 8 counting overtime that they were able to connect on touchdowns. And then against Oklahoma, they came up empty. They had the 2 field goals, but no touchdowns. It's a problem. If those 19 red zone opportunities that you just talked about, Hans, if they were able to, you know, let's just say get 3 or 4 more of those, they might be sitting here. Well, they would be sitting here at 3-1, clearly, and maybe at 4-0.
Yeah, because I just watched that Oklahoma game this morning, and you're talking about 4 minutes left in that game, and it's 10-6. And Cincinnati had a couple of stalled drives, and they were doing really well against Oklahoma. They were very much in that game. I feel like every game they've been right there to the very end. I want to talk a little bit about the tight end situation, because I think that – is it Mateer? Is that how you say his last name?
Yeah, Shimon Mateer. You got it right.
Shimon Mateer and Peyton Singletary. I think those two – that's a really good tight end duo, and I've seen them do some big things in – some real crunch moments. Talk about the tight ends that BYU is going to see tonight.
Yeah, they're both very good. Peyton Singletary, I think they came in kind of – Mateer was the number one guy coming into summer ball, and Singletary would have been your number two guy. However, they play a lot of, you know, two tight end sets, so both those guys are on the field for a long time. And Singletary has just done a wonderful job. He's made some great catches. He's really blocked well downfield. Which you know, which is what you need a tight end to do, like as you need your wide receivers to do. But he's also big enough guy that you can put him in there outside of tackle, and he's going to be able to hold his own as well. And Mateer's, boy, he just drips of NFL type of caliber. Been a little bit inconsistent, had a big drop in the Oklahoma game. Not to, you know, cause them to not get a touchdown or something like that, but had an opportunity to make a splash play, probably a 25, 30 yard gain, and, took his eyes off the ball, which, you know, that happens. But they're both very, very good. They both block well. They both are excellent receivers. They're guys that can make a whole lot of things happen. And there's a couple of younger guys also that Coach Satterfield will get in the game. They're listed as tight ends, but they play more the H-back, or they may line up, you know, next to the quarterback in the backfield just for additional blocking. But the two that you mentioned, Singletary and Mateer, really, really good tight end duo.
I just tell BYU fans that that BYU defense better be paying attention to both those guys, because they pop up big in crunch moments, third and eights, and in goal line situations. I thought that touchdown off the swing that Peyton Singletary had against Pitt was just awesome. They run some really good concepts to him. Teach our listeners a little bit about the Godfather, if you would, Jim.
Okay. Yeah. So Dante Corleone is his name, which is obviously where the nickname the Godfather came from. The weird thing is, as of I'm going to go back to maybe June or July, he had never seen the movie The Godfather, so he may have seen it by now. Dante's a young man. He's a second-year guy. He's a local kid from Cincinnati. He went to Coleraine High School, which a handful of other players are from Coleraine. And not a big, tall guy at all. He's probably listing at 6'2", but he's more like 6 foot, 6'1". Lost 15 pounds from last year, and he was a freshman All-American last year. And he's just a little quicker this year, a little more agile. And is just a guy that can create havoc, and where his numbers are not to where they were last year in reference to sacks, tackles for losses, and things of that. But what he's doing is he's eating up offensive linemen. He's getting double teamed almost every play. If they're not sending, and they may move him, Cincinnati, the defense coordinator, Brian Brown, may move him to the outside a little bit, and they may chip him with a tight end or a running back. But he's pretty much getting double teamed on every play. Well, you know, that cuts his numbers down, but it also opens up, you know, the defense for other guys, particularly at the second level, the linebacking crew to maybe slide through and, you know, where, you know, a guard has to go out on him along with the tackle, and that creates a problem in the A gap that maybe one of the linebackers can get through and put some pressure on a guy like Slovis, who they know they want, you know, they know they need to pressure. But, you know, he's just a great, great young man. I mean, just absolutely a pleasure to be around. And, you know, and his partners there on the defensive line, Juwan Briggs is equally as good of a young man. And not far behind him in reference to being a good defensive lineman. And Eric Phillips is a third guy. He's also a Coleraine High School young man. So those three are really playing well. And again, their numbers may not be showing it because they, you know, everybody, there was no hiding those guys this year coming into the season. But they're playing very, very solid. You'll see them in the backfield. They caused Dylan Gabriel, Oklahoma's quarterback, to throw the ball away or to throw it very early in many cases. So they may not be getting, you know, 5, 6, 7 sacks a game, but at the same time, they're creating some havoc back there in the backfield.
One of the guys that's helping him with that a little bit is at the dog position, that Daniel Grishik. And I say the name right because he was here with Utah State for a little while and had 8.5 sacks last year with the team that we cover here and that my co-host is actually the play-by-play voice for. And so we've been talking a lot about Daniel and his influence on this Cincinnati defense. He had some words earlier. He said, yeah, the Cincinnati game day and its experience in the environment is better than that at Lavelle Edwards Stadium, and everybody's kind of grabbed onto that and ran with it. I'm sure they're going to try to make it a nice, loud welcome for him coming up tonight. But talk a little bit about what Daniel Grishik has brought to this Cincinnati defense.
Yeah, he's done a good job. He's what I was talking about with the defensive line before. He's probably the one that's capitalized the most on it. And because he's that guy, he's, you know, mostly plays the mic, but they'll move him around. So he's more in the middle and he's able to get in there. And so he's done a nice job, more in the run game than in the passing game. Although he, you know, being at that position, you're certainly covering. And, you know, he's got a formidable job on his hand tonight with Isaac Rex, a 6'6" tight end that he'll be, you know, no doubt involved with. So he's done a good job. It's interesting that you say that in reference to the way, and he did make those comments. I was there for that. But it didn't come off that way in when he said it that day. He was trying to be complimentary. Mm-hmm. Now, he did say, and this is why I understand where the words came from, that, yes, it was louder at Nippert than it will be, you know, at the Bell Edwards Stadium. So, you know, guilty as charged. But not one piece of it was meant to be disrespectful whatsoever. You know, he's been here. He's done it. And, you know, when he played at Utah State, and he really is complimentary of the program out here.
No question about it. He's a great guy, and I just love the fodder. And I know it's, you know, those things. I just love it, but I know those things are always innocent. That's just a kid that's sitting there with his fans and his media saying, hey, man, this place is awesome. And it was. Watching that Oklahoma game, I was like, man, that place is jam-packed. It was definitely rowdy. I know he's coming fresh off that Oklahoma game. Like, that was a loud place because your fans got up for that game.
So, yeah, I mean, that was a second home game, third home game. But at the same time, there was something different about that game. And number one, it was Oklahoma. Number two, it's been loud. I think maybe the UCF game in 2020, no, it would have been 2019, might have been equal to it. But I've never seen a crowd like that. And I think that's what he was saying, you know. You're going to go out to Provo, Utah, and you're going to play for 65,000 plus fans, play in front of them, but they're a little bit further away from you. And yes, they can get loud. And I was reading something this morning in reference to a couple of situations at LaBelle Edwards Stadium where false starts were caused by the student section mostly. And that's exactly what happened at Nippert this past Saturday with Oklahoma. Oklahoma was backed up into the student section and, you know, it's hard to hear. And they, you know, a couple of false starts and the same thing that happened here. So again, you know, it's just a little bit, you know, but to be in a bigger stadium and everybody's a little bit farther away. And there's something about Nippert with the buildings all around there as well. It just kind of, you know, the sound doesn't leave. It just kind of reverberates through there. So, but it was quite an atmosphere. And, you know, quite honestly, you go back and you analyze the game, and you mentioned you watched it this morning. They were in a situation where they could have won that game. Now, they would have to play better at a couple of different spots. But
they were
never out of that football game. Yep, exactly.
They were in it the whole time. And I was thinking, oh, man, just a couple of things bounce here and there. You know, Emory Jones was stopped short on a fourth where it was close. Like, just little things that were, man, it was just so touchy. It was a great game. By the way, Jim Kelly, color analyst for the Cincinnati broadcast, does a fantastic job. Appreciate him taking a couple of minutes. Last thing from me, Jim, I'm impressed with Scott Satterfield. I really am. Head coach that has come in, and I think he's inspired this team. I think this is a better team than their record shows. And I think he's put together kind of a dream team coordinating staff with his offensive coordinator, Brad Glenn, and his defensive coordinator, who I got a lot of respect for, Brian Brown. Kind of a younger guy, but Brian comes with him from Louisville. And I'm watching this defensive scheme. This defensive scheme's got a lot of moving parts. You were talking about how they use Greshick and how they use Deshaun Pace and how they use Brian Threats. And I'm watching all these moving parts. It's really tough, I think, at least from my point of view, coming from you as a kind of a quarterback guy, to prepare for Brian Brown's defense. What are you seeing from this coordinator?
Yeah, you are spot on. I love Brian Brown. Number one, you know, he's fun to be around and talk to. And he's been with Scott Satterfield, I think, coming up on 9 years now. And both at, you know, Appalachian State and Louisville and now Cincinnati. And he's an interesting guy because he's a running back at Ole Miss, but he was also a point guard on their basketball team. So you're talking about a guy who, you know, is really a thinker, who is getting, you know, he's thinking ahead and how can I get into the offense's head and all of those things you just described, what he does with those players, you know, with Gresick and threats and pace and, you know, not just this good defensive line. He's really good in this defense. I mean, they led the nation at Louisville last year in sacks. And, you know, they're not on quite the pace that they were. I think they had 50 sacks in their 12 games, might include their bowl game, 13 games. They're not quite on that pace. But nonetheless, everything about him I really, really like. And he is. You're dead on. He's a young guy with a huge, bright future. You know, I'm assuming he wants to be a head coach sometime, and he will get his shot. He really will. He's done a wonderful job. And, you know, they paced it and play last week, and he was disciplined a little bit. And The gentleman that they put in there did a phenomenal job for him. And, you know, and then we lost Sam Anderson Jr., one of the starting corners, a guy that had been around 5 years. He's been out with a neck injury, head injury, and they're very, very cautious, as they should be, about something like that. And, you know, he's been able to, man, just kind of fill in where he's had to. Fortunately, no serious injuries. But Justin Harris, who got a little bit of some issues with some defensive pass interference calls up into the Pittsburgh game, has done a really, really good job, played a really good game against Oklahoma. So Brian Brown's, he's a rising star for sure, and I love being around him.
Yeah, he's great, man. His defense is fun to watch, and that's why I've got the chills thinking about this game tonight, Jim. Excited to see you up in the booth. Good luck to you and the Bearcats, and I'm sure I'll be talking to you here in a matter of 8 or 9 hours.
Yeah, absolutely. Hans, looking forward to it. And I think we're in, you know, I mean, everything on paper adds up to this being a really good close football game. So let's hope that's what we get.
Yeah, let's hope. Thank you. There you go, Jim Kelly. He is the color analyst for the Cincinnati Bearcats official broadcast, and he does a fantastic job. He's been doing it for a lot of years. And I talk a little bit about Brian Brown, this defensive coordinator. Jim mentioned that his Louisville Cardinal led the nation in sacks with 50. They were also fourth in fourth down defense, only allowing 19% of conversions. Third in overall takeaways. They had 30 turnovers last year. They were eighth in tackles for a loss with 97. They were 11th in scoring defense at 19.2. They're number 14 in interceptions at 15 and number 24 in total defense overall, only allowing 330 total yards a game. Brian Brown is an absolute mastermind defensively. And when I was watching his scheme this morning, I was like, oh, man, I'm so glad I don't have to block that crap. I am so glad that I just get to sit up in a booth and act like I know what I'm talking about. Because I'm telling you right now, by the way, Jake here at Tim Daly Mazda hanging out with us. I'm telling you right now, Jake, as smart as you are, I think even this defense will give you fits.
Oh, this guy.
Can I give you an observation, Hans?
Yeah, go ahead, Lloyd.
I will say, when you get on with these play-by-play color analysts that you've now become a member of, I feel like nobody else exists in your world except for them.
Why?
I just feel like we're not even a part of your inner circle anymore.
Oh, stop it.
Did you agree with that?
No.
Would you agree with that, Jake?
Absolutely.
Don't ever agree with
you
Lloyd.
You get that feeling, right?
I always agree with Lloyd.
Weird.
Don't ever agree with Lloyd. When you agree with him, then it encourages him.
But I agree with him.
Yeah, that's like we don't even exist anymore. You're just like you get on air with these guys. I know. It's like you get on air with these guys and it's like there's just nobody else in the world.
He's just part of this new fraternity, you know what I mean? And he forgets all of us as old buddies.
Hey, yeah. When I have a co-host that leaves me hanging like every twice a week.
I'm going to do this.
When Scotty leaves me high and dry twice a week, I just have to scrape and claw to keep relevancy, just to keep any semblance of relevancy. I have to do everything I possibly can.
Hey, you're deflecting right now. Don't deflect. Stop
deflecting.
Yes,
you see how we change the subject.
Has Scotty missed a Friday or two, Lloyd?
Today, yeah,
or
he's
three.
Out. No,
or,
he's only missed two.
Five.
He's missed two.
Oh, okay. Well,
see, he's the boss, so he knows. He's right. Only missed two, and you're trying to make it way worse than what it really
yes.
is.
I'm just telling the two.
Twice
you,
a week for a long time now.
It's not easy to fill the gigantic on-air shoes of Scott Gerard. So,
well, I'm not disagreeing with that. But you got Lloyd.
Lloyd, you could have buzzed in with a question. Did you have questions for
No, it's okay. Because it's just like it's, I see you two just like holding hands on
air.
Oh,
my gosh. This is why I didn't let Lloyd ask questions, because he would have came on and said, Jim, what was it like to lose your third Super Bowl with the Buffalo Bills? I guarantee it.
Wrong
yeah, but
Jim Kelly.
Not the same one.
I know, but I think Lloyd would have said, because Lloyd loves it when he's like, hey, why don't we get Jim Kelly on the
I did ask him this last time. I say, why are we getting the old Buffalo Bills quarterback on?
Such a dork.
I mean, that's a good get. Don't get me wrong.
Such a dork.
Oh, that's goodness.
Hey, let's talk about some of the great things we got going on down here, Jake. By the way, I love my Mazdas. I bought two Mazdas from you. It's been maybe 8 months now.
Yeah.
I want to say it was like spring, early spring maybe, and we came in, bought a couple cars from you.
Can we say it was early spring already? I mean, holy cow. Yeah, 8 months ago was early spring.
I know. It's flying, man. Time is flying. But I do want to talk about this because I was able to come in and find two cars. I came in with two price points.
Yes.
I needed to stay under a certain amount monthly on each car. And, you know, I'll just throw it out there. I needed to stay under $350 a month on one and stay under $110 on another.
Yep.
I came in with the number I needed. And what I loved was you were able to find me a car at both price points.
Absolutely.
And both served me extremely well.
Absolutely. You know, and here's the thing. Let me just go ahead and tell you what we're up against, and I'll just throw it out there. Obviously, it's the last Friday and Saturday of the month. Everybody's listening right now. It's Football Friday. And I want to throw out a crazy deal on any new car on my lot. Any new car, I have to sell 20 new cars in the next 2 days. 20. That's a big, big number.
So by Sunday.
Yeah. So by the end of business Saturday night, because we're closed on Sunday.
Okay.
So
you've got to hit 20.
I have to sell 20. Now, what does that mean to everybody that's listening? I'll just be real quick about it. I'm willing to go $1,000 under invoice minus any rebates plus any subvented APR programs.
Okay, so walk me through that.
Okay, so
I can understand.
So invoice.
Okay.
Minus whatever rebate the car qualifies for. So let's say it was on a CX-90PF.
Okay.
So let's say it's a CX-90PF, you're going to get an invoice pricing. So that's going to be usually about $1,500, $2,000 under what the MSRP is.
Okay.
Then you're going to get whatever the rebate is. So on this.
Also, the rebate on top of that.
On top of that. Then I'm also going to give you the subvented APR, so the special rate through Mazda. So some of them qualify for the 0.9, depending on credit, 0.9, 1.9, 2.9. So I'm going to stack all of it.
All of those discounts.
Yeah, and nobody stacks, by the way. Nobody in the car business stacks, and I'm going to stack because I need to get rid of 20 cars.
And then did you throw another number in there?
Yeah, so you're going to get invoice,
uh-huh.
rebates, 1,000 under invoice,
okay,
rebates, and
The 1,000 is what I heard. Mm-hmm. So 1,000 under.
Yes. And so I'll pull out the invoice, bring it out to you so you can actually see what the invoice price is.
You then really need get to move some cars.
Yeah, I got to move 20 cars. I have to move 20 cars.
So if you're right now, if you're in the market for a car, and you've, let's say you've got a nice trade-in.
Yeah, I'm going to step up on it right now.
Jake's going to step up on the trade-in. That's what you ended up doing for me.
Yes.
In order to get to that number that I needed.
Because sometimes you can't always, especially on used vehicles, we buy used vehicles and sometimes we buy them bad, just like some people buy cars bad, right? And so sometimes the only way to get there is by me giving you extra money on your trade, which I have the capabilities of doing. So, you know, here's the thing. If you come in today or tomorrow, you're going to get the best deal that you have ever gotten. You know, obviously, I understand that we're in a rough market right now, so I want to make it affordable for everybody and get you guys into a position that you can get into a brand new car at an extremely affordable price.
Come down and see us. It is the Tim Daly Mazda here in Southtown. It's in the Southtown Auto Mall. Probably the quickest way is just to get off 106th and go east off the freeway. And we're just right there on the frontage road. Mm-hmm. You're going to find us, Tim Daly Mazda.
Auto Mall Drive, right on Auto Mall Drive.
Auto Mall Drive in the Auto Mall. Come down and say hi. I think we've got, what do we got, some candy out on the table.
Some donuts over there.
We got some donuts, some, maybe some Jazz gear that's hanging around, but that's not what it's about today. Today it's about selling. It's about selling cars.
It's about Hans Olsen.
Lloyd.
It is. In his fun announcer friends now. Yeah. Because he doesn't like Jake anymore. Yeah, he just liked me because he got good car deals, but that was it. Now he forgets about us, Lloyd.
Kind of how it goes.
You know what?
Hey, are you still a Raiders fan?
I'm going to hug you just a little more tender.
Are you still a Raiders fan?
Yeah, dyed in the wool, man.
Now he's going to say something disparaging about the Raiders.
That's not true.
That's how you do. Rinse and repeat.
We just got to stop breaking people.
See? That's what I'm talking about. There we go.
Chandler Jones.
he's a mess.
He got arrested just now.
Did he really?
Absolutely. He just got arrested.
For doxing? Was it for putting numbers out?
No, I don't think that was it.
Nope. Okay. No, so he violated a protective order.
Oh, did he?
And they went and swooped him up.
Yeah, we'll maybe hit on that and what you may have missed and a lot more. Come down, take advantage of these cars.
New cars, let's go.
Car deals. Jake, thanks.
Absolutely.
We're going to be talking Oregon State next. We've got Mike Parker, who is one of the best analysts when it comes to the Oregon State Beavers football program, one of the best that you're going to find. That's all coming up next.
When it comes to high school football, KSL has you covered. Don't miss the Game Night Live Game of the Week.
The Lone Peak Knights battle the Sky Ridge Falcons on Friday, September 29th. Stream the game online starting at 7 on the KSL Sports app and listen to the KSL Sports Red Zone on Friday nights at 7 on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
It's Game Night Live, brought to you by UCCU. Love where you bang.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Great conversation with Oregon State analyst. He's one of the best in the business. He has been around it for years and years and years, covering this Oregon State program. He is seeing its ascension right now. And, you know, the most interesting thing that you really get into is where they're headed and what he's seen as they progressed. Mike, how much different is it?
Well, as you remember, Jonathan inherited Jonathan Smith a pretty bleak situation, a 1-11 team and the head coach that unfortunately left 5 games into that 2017 season. And so the reclamation project was a profound one for Jonathan and his staff. And steadily, really steadily, he hired a great staff that he's been able to keep mostly intact. He made a big change in going to Trent Bray as an interim defensive coordinator. Last year in Trent's first year as the D coordinator, the Beavers were number one in total defense in the league with the Utes second. Now, Trent lost a lot of guys this year, but he's a good enough coach with a continuity in his systems that even though they did get hit in the mouth in Pullman last week, Cam Ward throwing it all over the yard, I do think that Trent's a resourceful D coordinator that will get better against the passing game and how much the Utes will challenge him and the Beavers in that respect this Friday will be determined. But what Jonathan has done, guys, is just it's one of the great coaching jobs in America. And so both schools in that sense to me fly under the radar. What Utah's doing, I'm glad to see some of the national people checking in, weighing in, and saying this may be the great Kyle Whittingham's best coaching job, given all of the injuries and certainly what's gone on at the quarterback position to be 4-0 with the resume that the Utes have already built and ranked 10th in the country. Given those circumstances, Coach Whittingham has done an amazing job. And I think Jonathan Smith has certainly been under the radar nationally for the job he's done at Oregon State.
How does DJ Ugualele fit in there with Oregon State?
I still think that remains to be seen in terms of what we hope, he hopes, Jonathan hopes, all of Beaver Nation hopes that the best days for DJ are ahead. He broke on the scene pretty well at San Jose State with a pretty prolific game that looked like, okay, well, the Beavers have solved their quarterback conundrum. You guys saw last year in a game that, you know, Scott Mitchell said to us earlier, a lot closer than the 42-16 final indicated. Beavers were only down 21-16 midway through the third, threw four interceptions in the game, one a pick six, one set up another short field touchdown. That the Beavers were very competitive in that defeat, and with better quarterback play, might have won at Rice-Eccles last year. That was Scott's contention, and certainly the way we kind of looked at it in our world. But we felt with a powerful offensive line and a very productive run game that just a little improvement at the quarterback position would really elevate the Beavs. I do think they're better. Jonathan Smith was asked that directly yesterday at his presser. Are you better at the quarterback position? And the very fact that four games in, that question was asked, gives you a sense of a little bit of the uneven play for DJ Uiagalelei so far. But he's a big-time talent with great physical tools and a powerful arm. He's a good runner. I don't think he's had his best day yet. So, you know, that I think for both teams, the quarterback position this Friday night, a lot of eyes will be on it. I expect if Cam Rising plays, that's obviously a huge lift for you guys. But if Nate Johnson starts and plays, it's another start and experience for him. He'll be better. I think DJ is going to be better as we go forward.
Where did things get sideways last week against Washington State?
Well, two plays in, they did pretty well sideways. You know, Cam Ward rushed for 12. The next play was a 63-yard touchdown pass from Ward to Kyle Williams. And it was the first time the Beavers had given up points in the first quarter, first time they'd been behind in a game. And so it was sideways early, but it was clear that wasn't just a one-off, with Ward going 19 for 20 in the first half, throwing the ball to wide-open receivers and with little pressure. And it's hard to say, because that truly is the anomaly in Trent Bray as the coordinator and his defense's body of work. It, Trent's credit and the players' credit, after getting shredded most of the first half, yeah, I know, you know, the Cougs had a lot of points and, you know, had 28 at halftime, only scored 10 more. So one touchdown in the second half, I thought the secondary made some adjustments. They were a bit more physical. They were in better position. Beavers forced a couple of turnovers that gave them some life. So they made adjustments, but it was a Cam Ward show. I've never seen him that good. We've seen Mike Leach's team through the years throw it around. Anthony Gordon once threw for 606 against the Beavers in Coleman. At the end of the first half, Ward had 293. He settled for 404. So the Beavers did a better job on him, making some adjustments in the second half, but the hole was a little too deep at that point.
Well, Fenwick looked really good against Washington State in that run game, and I know there were nearly 250 yards that were put up in that game. Take us through what you believe is how consistent Oregon State is in that run game, and do you feel like it's consistent enough that they can put together some semblance of a run against this Utah defensive front?
Well, that'll be the question, you know, because the Utes, as good as anybody in the race, ridiculously good. I look at the numbers and feel they can't quite be right, but they are. That's how good Utah is against the run and in all phases, really. That's why I think it's going to be important. The Beavers will have the will to run it. They'll be committed to it. And I think they'll run better than other teams have against the Utes, simply because they're built to do it with two durable, strong backs behind a good offensive line. That doesn't mean you're going to see Damian Martinez average 7 yards a carry or Fenwick rip off another 100-yard game per se, but I think they'll be productive enough to give themselves a good shot at winning the game. But make no mistake, they're going to have to be able to do something downfield in the pass game. Jonathan Smith and Ryan Lindgren, his coordinator, know that's got to happen. And DJ's just got to rise to it. And I think as I said, his best days are ahead. But it all starts with a run for both of these teams. And to me, it's very interesting to see how it's going to play out Friday. I think we're in for a physical, fierce, in-the-trenches battle that's going to be a lot of fun to watch.
So
granted, the level of competition wasn't up to Washington State for those first three games, but 17 to San Jose State, which I think San Jose State's a good team. UC Davis just a touchdown. San Diego State, you hold the Aztecs to 9 points, and then 38 to Washington State. Do you kind of look at that game as an anomaly defensively against a really good team, or do you still have a few questions about that defense?
A little bit of both, and I do think at the end of the season, my hope is, our belief is, as a fan base, a broadcast crew, that we're going to look back at what happened in this game. When you look back over the 2023 season, I do think it is going to be the one-off in terms of, you know, the really big numbers that Ward put up, particularly in that first half. Again, they made some adjustments, and that's good to see that they were able to, because, as you guys know, there are a lot of challenges coming in the quarterback position and the ability of people to throw it all over it effectively. Now, whether Friday night presents that, I mean, I'm not, you know, no disrespect to Nate Johnson if he's the guy, but he hasn't quite shown that. I'm not sure what, you know, if Andy Ludwig, if it's Nate, if he opens it up a little bit more and gives Nate an opportunity to try to take advantage maybe of what the Cougs were able to. But the Cougs are built. When I talk about the Beavers being built to run it, Cam Ward and that Airbuckle, Ben Arbuckle offense are built to throw it. They just executed flawlessly through much of that game. They're going to face other programs and quarterbacks that also have a similar approach, but I'm not sure they're going to see a hotter quarterback at any point the rest of the year than Cam Ward was in that first half. Not only his throws, but just brilliant catches. Josh Kelly was magnificent with reeling in one-handed catches here and there. It was something to watch. I think you got to tip your helmet to Washington State and then hope that when you face other spread pass-oriented teams, you're a little better equipped, having seen the best of it, Cam Ward.
I got to watch some of that Oregon State-San Diego State game. And there were a couple guys that caught my eye. One in particular was Andrew Chatfield, who was getting after the quarterback pretty healthily. I'm just curious, was that more consistent of what you think Oregon State's going to be? Because I know that they put up, I don't know how many sacks it was, but it was a lot against San Diego State. Is that kind of who they are? Are they a good one-on-one rushing team?
They had been. Yeah, they had been, and Chatfield had two of those sacks, and the Beavers had six in the game. And I think they thought they were going to be able to pressure Cam Ward at Washington State and make him uncomfortable, too, not necessarily to the tune of six sacks. They had two. I think it was an official stat line credited to them with one. But that offense design, Ward got the ball out so quickly that the pass rush didn't really – it felt like it never really was a factor against the Cougs, but it has been in their other games. It'll be interesting to see what they're able to do Friday night. Chatfield's good. I don't think he's a Jonah Ellis, who was a beast against UCLA. I've watched a lot of that game, and it was frightening kind of the way that thing finished and even the way the whole game played out. But they did. Morgan Scalley threw a lot of stuff, and an inexperienced, talented, yes, but inexperienced quarterback who, like you guys, you said, when did things go sideways for the Beavers at Pullman? Two plays, and it was one play in for Dante at UCLA against the Utes. And we know that feeling. We saw it last year at Rice-Eccles. So I think the Beaver defense is going to be equipped to, and Nate's elusive, I understand that, but I think their coverages are going to be better. Trent's going to mix the looks up and make it difficult for Nate when he does drop back, but six sacks worth, probably not.
There you go, Mike Parker. He is the best mind when it comes to Oregon State football. He's been watching it a lot of years. And, you know, that Oregon State defense, they're getting to the quarterback nearly three and a half times a game. They have racked up 13 sacks for 100 yards so far this season. They're just right behind the University of Utah, who's racked up 14 for 118. They're just right there with them. So it's a really aggressive defense. We'll talk about how that plays into this game and so much more. Football Fridays coming up the top of the hour. What you may have missed is next.
It's game week for the Utes, and the Zone is getting you ready for kickoff. It's a huge Pac-12 showdown for Kyle Whittingham and the Utes as they hit the road to Corvallis for a battle with Oregon State. Listen all week long for the best coverage of Utah football. Then catch the Ute pregame show this Friday at 6 p.m. presented by Zions Bank, with the postgame show immediately following the game. Monday morning to the post-game press conference. Your home for the best coverage of Ute football is right here on 97.5, the KSL Sports Zone.
Football Friday is coming up. Alima Harrington, Coach McBride. Alima, what do we got for Football Friday?
Oh, man, we're going to talk about BYU Cincinnati. We're going to get ready for the Utes. You just had a great conversation about Oregon State. And I'm looking forward to that game. That's going to be a battle. We'll talk a lot about that. Plus, there was a bet that was made last week that there might be some residual here. We're going to have to pay up, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know, but we'll talk about that as well.
Let's just say somebody brought a bag of Skittles.
That's right.
Somebody brought a bag of Skittles. That's all it was. Skittles.
That's all it was Skittles.
Just yep. Skittles.
Skittles, we're going to keep this thing real.
We got some Friday Night Lights, too.
Yes, big game. Pleasant Grove, American Fork tonight. That's going to be a big one. Looking for a PG undefeated. Like, they're back on a roll.
Yeah, it's good to see them. I'm excited. We got Utah State on the road. That's why Scotty G's not here. Yeah. He leaves us high and dry again, guys.
Well, he leaves us no really alternative but to just light him up. Is he going to join us?
He's not going to join us.
Then he leaves us no alter. You know what happens when you don't show up for your own show?
You get lit.
You get lit up.
You get lit.
Well, I hope he's not using Azimic for his weight loss.
I hope not. Too
Whatever close. He's doing, he's looking fantastic. Yeah,
he looks good.
He looks good.
But Azimic seems to be, every time you turn on CNN News, they said, don't be taking this stuff.
Well, I can tell you for a fact he's not using that.
Okay.
It's just a good old-fashioned elbow grease from the boys.
Good for him. Okay. Good for him.
He's doing it the right way. So we get into all those things. We are live at Tim Daly Mazda. We're here in the Auto Mall. It's just off 106 South and Auto Mall Drive. Please come down.
If you haven't checked out Mazdas lately, some of their new models are gorgeous.
Yes, they are.
And luxury. And you know, if you're thinking, you know, I haven't looked at a Mazda in a long time, you owe it to yourself to come down to Tim Daly Mazda and check them out.
They're a great vehicle. Yeah. I own two of them. I just bought two of them from Jake.
Oh, you did? Well, give me my money back.
Coach, used. Very old and used.
Hey, you notice how he changed his...
Yeah.
I just bought two, and I'm thinking, hey, wait a minute.
170,000 miles on one, 195,000 on the other. That kind of used.
Come on now. Come on now. You are the voice of the Cougars now. You need to be riding, you know, pretty.
Well, I know I can get there in a Mazda. Even with 190,000 miles on, I know I'm going to be.
That is true.
I'm going to be getting to my job. So come down, check out Mazda. Football Friday's coming up next.
I'm Dave Cawley, investigative journalist and host of the podcast, Cold. Don't miss Cold's new Season 3, where I look into the unsolved disappearance of Cherie Warren, a woman last seen leaving her job at a Salt Lake City office in 1985. Police cast suspicion on Cherie's estranged husband and boyfriend, but never made any arrests or recovered Cherie's remains. Find Cold Season 3, The Search for Cherie, anywhere you get your podcasts.